Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the former number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm, now bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs by me, Ross Bolin, and my dear friend Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett, speak to the people.
Well, Ross, next time you come around to this podcast...
Oh, God, the Joker again?
You need to bring some backup so that I don't have to go into the Gravitron and get choked out by a Russian madman.
It's Mayor Klein.
It's Mayor Klein. That's right. Now, that's all I'm going to give you. That's all I'm going to give you, though.
Okay.
That's the only taste of Stranger Things that you get on the ad-based version of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Yes. If you want to hear our broader discussion, obviously, you'll have to go to our Patreon.
Wow.
But that is my new... That's my new voice. It's my new version of But Both Me Brothers Were Soldiers.
Yeah.
And it's my Cary Elwes sounds like the Joker voice.
Is he the guy from Liar Liar and Saw?
Yes, he's in Liar Liar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the doofus dad.
Yes. He's also famously, I believe, in The Princess Bride.
He's had a sneaky good career.
Oh, long career for that, like, for that guy.
Not just long.
I had no idea.
He's in good stuff.
He's apparently British.
What?
I didn't know. Yeah.
Okay, that's an incredible American accent. And not in this show, necessarily. This is just the Joker that he's doing in Big Little Lies Season 2.
It really, really feels like he is...
Stranger Things 3.
Yeah, now some people got at me and were like, man, he's been doing that like devilish accent for quite some time. But
on other shows?
Yeah, on other stuff, I guess.
It's terrible. Nobody's told... It's not good. I don't like it very much.
But yeah, that's my new... I mean, you know.
The Joker slash Mayor Klein.
That's my Joker slash Mayor Klein, and I just wanted... I wanted all of the Clam fam to be able to hear it so they knew what type of things they were missing out on over there on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles.
And if this hasn't enticed you to join us and give us your money on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, I honest to God do not know what will. We have a nice little rundown for the episode today. Lots of HBO talk. We get up to speed on Big Little Lies. We're going to get into Euphoria. We're going to talk about the Emmys, the Emmy noms that just got handed out. Was that today, this afternoon?
It was this morning, I believe.
This morning?
Yeah.
On the morn?
Yeah. Just perfectly coinciding with our show today that the Emmy nominations were released this morning.
Indeed.
We get to talk about them right away.
Love when that happens.
I'm very excited about that.
And then we're going to dog on Disney a little bit for destroying our childhood memories.
Yeah, indeed.
And if you're wondering, what about Dark? Just wait. Next week. Next week we'll say next week again, and we'll keep pushing it back until nobody ever gets to talk about Dark.
I mean, here's the good news. I mean, well, it's good news. I think it's good news.
For the record, I'm the one that's behind now.
Big Little Lies ends next week.
Yes, it does. I didn't realize that.
I assumed we were in for like 10 episodes. It's only 7.
I thought we were getting 8.
Okay, yeah, maybe, and then I thought we were getting 8.
Because
no,
it's an even number.
It's only 7, so we'll be done with Big Little Lies.
And then Dark comes
next week, yeah. And then...
Well, but we are going to talk, for the record, Dark will be discussed next week. Episodes 1 through 4 will be what we're through, okay? We've done 1 and 2, we'll be talking about 3 and 4. I'll see if I have time to watch any more between now and then, but I'm guessing that's where we'll be at, if I had to guess.
I made a huge mistake, actually, before, on my way to podcast. I was at regular work, and now I'm at podcast work. And on my way over here, I was listening to another podcast talk about Dark. And so if my brain wasn't already fried from, like, just like a full work day, now I'm going to have to crawl out of this... wormhole, pun intended, because I'm trying to figure out the various. I'm just like sitting in the car, sitting in traffic, just being like, "Wait, what?
That's me the entire time I watch that show.
Well, wherever you are in Dark, whether you've already seen this part or you haven't, episode 4, season 2 has a pretty a pretty dope thing, like reveal, basically.
I'm not exaggerating. Hundreds of DMs in Twitter and Instagram form being like, have you gotten to episode 4?
Yeah. So it's,
and I'm like, no, goddammit, please leave me alone. Give me time.
Yeah.
And I'll get there, but we will discuss next
a real
week.
Brain buster.
Good Lord. This episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier and happier you. And Talisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All of their products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary that you actually want to spend time in. Their most advanced luxury hybrid mattress is made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support. The hybrid is thoughtfully designed to be the best of both worlds. This is the bed I have, the hybrid. It's the most comfortable mattress I've ever laid eyes and body on. Barrett actually has the hybrid as well. Barrett, do you sleep well at night on your luxurious hybrid?
Of course I sleep well, Ross. I'm the mayor of the city.
Mayor Klein sleeps fantastically on his hybrid by Lisa. Lisa believes all people, unlike Mayor Klein, should have access to deep rest and relaxation, and as such, they make it easy for their customers to know they've made the right choice through their social impact initiatives tied to each purchase. One of the things they do is they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Their mattresses at Lisa are made right here in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Check out the reviews on their website. If you're like, I don't trust Ross, I need other people to tell me things. This is the bed Barrett and I have. I'm telling you, the hybrid is unreal. If you want to spring for a couple extra, no pun intended, for a couple extra bucks, the hybrid is the way to go. Grab a pillow and a blanket while you're there. If you order today, you can get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at Leesa.com/dragon when you use the promo code dragon. That's Leesa.com/dragon. Promo code dragon. Into the news, Barrett. Let's talk about these Emmy nominations.
Let's talk about Emmys.
Lead the way, sir.
Game of Thrones leads the way with 32 nominations. Woo. It's the most nominated show in the history of the Emmys. HBO as a whole got 137 overall nominations.
That's almost an egregious amount.
Last year, I believe Netflix had more nominations than HBO. HBO typically has the most.
Okay.
And this year, they reclaimed that throne.
Right. Last year was the one when they finally got somebody took over. Yeah.
But 137 is absurd. And sometimes I worry that like we're a little too HBO heavy on this podcast.
Yeah.
But then the Emmy nominations come around, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this is why we talk about HBO the most, because it remains the gold standard.
Yes.
Even if Netflix is able to topple it in the number of nominations every once in a while.
And Netflix, for the record, it's not really a fair comparison, because Netflix is throwing so much shit at the wall, and HBO is a more focused production company.
Right, absolutely. They're definitely more choosy. Mm-hmm. So I won't just read every single thing, but I did want to kind of run down the list and talk to you a little bit about some of the matchups that we have, some of the first-time nominations,
ooh,
that type of thing. Let's start with the big one, Outstanding Drama. The matchup here seems to be between HBO's hot newcomer and their tentpole franchise.
Yeah.
So, Ross, if you had to vote, which award are you going with, Succession, or are you going to give it to Game of Thrones? If you were voting.
And this is for the season,
This is for the season.
So
yes.
Game of Thrones final season versus Succession.
Succession
season one
is what I see as the big matchup. The other ones on this list are Better Call Saul, Bodyguard, Killing Eve, Ozark, Pose, and This Is Us.
Okay.
So Handmaid's Tale won last year, but it is for the various weird qualification reasons about timing and all, it is not nominated this year.
Do you see Succession as a realistic threat to Game of Thrones in this category? Now let me ask that again. First of all, if I'm answering that question point blank,
yeah,
picking Succession season one or Game of Thrones final season to win this award, I'm picking Succession, because
yeah,
I think they started something so special with that season, and it's so fucking good.
Yes.
And they deserve that praise.
Right. In the way that we'll talk about kind of the down the ballot here a little bit, but I'm rewarding Game of Thrones in a couple of other categories.
Okay.
And so to me, like, the better overall season was pretty clearly the first season of Succession.
It was.
So that's the way I'm going to vote.
I have a hard time believing they will give that to anybody but Game of Thrones.
It's hard. This one's really hard to know, because a lot of times they do like trendy newcomers.
Right.
Like Maisel last year, for example.
Right.
Other times they stick with, you know, the Breaking Bads and that type of thing.
They tip the hat for the last season.
Right.
Thing,
exactly. So that one will be interesting to see. Outstanding Comedy. is a really, really tough one.
If I don't start Fleabag soon.
Fleabag, which has all of the critical praise. Barry, which had an incredible, incredible, incredible season two.
I'm so behind.
Maisel is still there. Russian Doll from Netflix, which was super creative and had really, really cool, like, kind of...
You watched that too?
Uh-huh.
What the fuck?
New storytelling. And then Veep, which it was the final season for Veep as well. Went out with a bang. Great season. I haven't watched Fleabag yet.
Yeah, so, I don't deserve a vote here.
So my vote would go to Barry here, but this is a really, really competitive category, and I mean, I don't know which way they'll go.
If you've ever found yourself being like, I feel like I have the same sense of humor as Ross, you should probably watch Fleabag, because everyone I know has been like, you have to watch this show immediately, you're going to love it.
Yes. Okay, lead actress and lead actor in a drama. Both Emilia Clarke and Kit Harington got their first lead actor and actress noms here. They've been nominated before, but for supporting. Kit once and Emilia three times. So this, I cannot imagine. This is where I'm voting for Game of Thrones. I give these awards to Kit and to Emilia here.
See, depending on who they're up against, obviously.
So let's take a quick look-see here.
Yeah, because the thing is, I loved Emilia's performance even in the shoddy writing. I didn't think Kit necessarily, like, when did he earn a fucking...
So, okay, because here's where I'm giving those body of work awards.
So you're just saying, for being the big part of the show that you were...
Yes.
The show being as big as it was.
In its final seasons, these two characters were the two characters.
They were.
They were the focus, and they deserve these lead actor nominations. Now, from my perspective, lead actor doesn't sound all that competitive. It's Jason Bateman from Ozark, Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us, Milo Ventimiglia from This Is Us, Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul. And,
man, bro, that's heat, though.
And Billy Porter from Pose.
At least the This Is Us ones and the Better Call Saul, those are well-acted
okay,
shows.
Bob Odenkirk on Better Call Saul is incredible, but they haven't given it to him yet, which means they don't think it's good enough.
That's fucking sad.
Right?
The two seasons I've seen, he was phenomenal.
He's awesome. Yeah. He is awesome. But they haven't...
You know,
like,
he's like a talented writer and shit, too, and he's one of those guys that's had a ridiculous career all over the place.
The real threat here is Billy Porter from Pose, because he's been, like... He's been like a golden god on red carpets, and he's very much like part of this, like the LGBTQ conversation.
Right.
He's been like, you know, he's kind of a...
He's an it guy.
Yeah, he's an it guy. He's been all over the place. People really, really like are loving his work on Pose and various. So that's actually the one that. But this, I mean, if they give the best drama to Game of Thrones, it's hard to imagine them not giving it to Kit and Emilia too.
Yeah,
you never know,
because it would seem those two kind of go hand in hand.
So last year, Sandra Oh from season one of Killing Eve won this,
right?
But this year, she's up against Jodie Comer, her co-star on Killing Eve, who I believe was nominated for supporting last year. So I could foresee them splitting the vote. And then you have Viola Davis from How to Get Away with Murder, Laura Linney for Ozark, Robin Wright for House of Cards.
What?
And that's it. And Mandy Moore for This Is Us. Finally got her nomination in the show's worst season.
Wow. That's got to feel good.
So, I mean, like, to be fair, I haven't watched Killing Eve season two. I don't watch these other shows.
She did so well this final season.
And Emilia Clarke, like, I feel like she just deserves this, man.
She killed it, though. She really did. She made you feel all that nonsense, even when it was nonsense, which was effective.
Her more than Kit, I think.
Kit didn't have to do much.
Deserves this award. But to me, they both deserve this. Neither one has won.
Yo, is he going to get up there and is he going to say, I don't want it?
He should.
Yeah.
He should say that.
You're my queen.
Lead actress for a comedy is super loaded. Christina Applegate in that show that we've talked about a little bit, Dead to Me, is nominated.
Oh, yeah.
Natasha Lyonne, Russian Doll, Phoebe Waller-Bridge for Fleabag. Rachel Brosnahan, who won last year for Maisel, is nominated again. Lead actor in comedy. This is the one that I feel most confident about.
You left Natasha Lyonne out, dick.
I did. I said for her for Russian Doll. Lead actor for a comedy series. Anthony Anderson for Blackish, Don Cheadle for Black Monday, Ted Danson for The Good Place, Michael Douglas for Kominsky Method, Bill Hader for Barry, Eugene Levy for Schitt's Creek. This has to be Bill Hader. This has to be Bill Hader.
Has he ever been nominated before?
I don't think he got nominated for season one.
Man, his career. I wish I could buy stock in it.
Tell you what. But
he's doing it.
Both of his co-stars were nominated for supporting actor in a comedy. And on supporting actress for a comedy, my only note here is that Betty Gilpin got nominated for Glow again, but Alison Brie did not. So I'm not sure what's going on there. It feels like that's two snubs in a row for Alison Brie. So
that's a shame.
Hard look. Supporting actor and actress in a drama. This is where we have a bunch more Game of Thrones nominations. Game of Thrones took 4 of 6 slots.
And supporting actress?
Yes.
Goodness
Gwendolyn
gracious.
Christie, Sophie Turner, Macy Williams, and Lena Headey.
Damn.
Yeah.
I thought I saw something about the Red Woman getting nominated.
She was also nominated for a guest star on a drama.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
So they hit everybody, man.
They really, really did. On actor, they took for supporting actor in a drama, Thrones took 3 of 6 slots. Dinklage, Nikolai Calder-Wastow, and Alfie Allen.
Okay.
Theon got a nomination, which is kind of shocking to me.
That's a tip of the hat there.
I'm thinking of one scene that he was in this season.
It was a very long, slow motion scene, though.
Just you? Are you with that? You gonna you
no,
like the Alfie Allen?
That's an out of respect nomination. That's a body of work nomination. You're right. He didn't. I can't remember more than a couple scenes.
Yeah, I just weird season to finally throw him in the mix there.
Yeah.
Limited series HBO is once again dominant. Chernobyl and Sharp Objects both got nominated, but no True Detective.
Wow. Okay.
Mahershala Ali got the nom for lead actor in a limited series, as did Jared Harris, Legasov in Chernobyl. Amy Adams and
Jared Harris's.
What's up?
They got to give that shit to Jared Harris.
Yeah. He feels like a lock for it. Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson both nominated for Sharp Objects. And Emily Watson and Stellan Skarsgård also both nominated for Chernobyl.
Right on.
Last note about the noms, 9 acting nominations for When They See Us, which we briefly mentioned a couple weeks ago.
Oh, damn.
The Netflix.
So it's not a documentary?
It is. No. It's a dramatization.
Oh, wow. For whatever reason, I was under the impression it was a documentary.
Yeah. So okay. 9 acting noms in that limited series. In those limited series categories.
At some point when the dark cloud of all these other
shows
we're just watching
a million shows that are just dark as shit.
I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
Just, I can't handle it right now.
Yeah.
It can't be put on my plate.
Anyways, a lot of fun things to look for on the Emmy noms. Some tough races there, but I do expect Game of Thrones cleans up a lot of these.
Fun.
The tough ones will honestly be the supporting actor and actress because I feel like they'll split the vote.
Yeah. That's where it gets weird,
you know,
when you're going up against each other, and
right.
It's like, especially when there's 4 of you in one category, and there's only 6 slots. What
yeah,
the fuck? That's
yeah.
a lot. Well,
that's
shall we move on?
Those are all my notes for the Emmys.
To Big Little Lot. When are the Emmys?
I don't even know.
Oh, distant.
I think a couple months
aren't
or something.
Usually a bit
September,
out.
I think.
A little bit out.
I want to say September
when they announce these things.
Yeah,
yeah. Big Little Lies. Then
let's do it.
As
we
said. There is only 1 episode left. There are only 7 in this season. This is the penultimate episode, Barrett. Hashtag penultimate. It's titled The Bad Mother.
The Bad Mother.
This episode was. Last week obviously ended with Bonnie spotting Corey coming out of the police station, which we forgot to mention because I skipped over the note in my outline and the internet lit us on fire for it, Barrett. Sorry about that. That's on me. And you, but also me. Mostly me.
For not knowing that this was only 7 episodes?
No. We completely forgot to mention
the
episode.
So I did see that, and I remember I did think we mentioned that, but I do remember how we missed that because I was very thrown off. At the end of our Big Little Lies talk, you say, and the big reveal from this episode was. And I was so certain that you were going to start talking about that.
Yeah.
When you were like, all the women are going to have to testify at the trial.
Oh, damn it.
I was like,
I did it.
Oh,
I
that's a big reveal. Okay. All right. So I guess we'll get to the other big reveal in a minute. And then I think we forgot to.
Yeah. So I've totally forgot to bring it up. And my replies on Twitter and Instagram were like, I think you guys may have missed the biggest single scene in the entire episode. Which is interesting because no, we didn't. It turns out if he had been a police informant, yes, which is what everybody thought. Well, everybody jumped the gun on.
He's still sus AF though,
sure,
right?
Sure. Okay, maybe.
Something's going on.
Maybe. But his story to Jane when she confronts him at the beginning of this episode is that he was being brought in for questioning. The problem is the way he was exiting the police station just immediately rung so true to, like, police informant. He looked comfortable, like he'd been there before. Or,
yes,
like, maybe he
yes.
could be undercover. Like, you didn't get the impression this is somebody who's just having been called in to be a witness that looks terrified. No, he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, it just feels like you can't cliffhang on that and then kind of write it off like they did in this episode. Like, oh, no, it's no big deal. He was just, they brought him in for questioning. You know? That's all.
It would not be a great bit of storytelling to do that.
I don't know. We'll see.
It would be strange. But yeah, so anyway, I'm hoping.
Is the seventh episode, by the way, it's going to be like 90 minutes long or something?
You would have to think so based on not that much fucking
unfolds. Are we getting a season three of this?
I don't think so. There's been a lot of hate. Like a lot. Like an excessive amount.
You think they're going to wrap it up, all this shit, next week, though?
No, I just don't know if they'll commit to a third season based on the workload and the amount of stars that they have to wrangle together.
That's what I keep thinking, too. I'm like, this is a bunch of A-list stars that are doing it's an HBO prestige drama, obviously. Now, learning that this was only seven episodes long for the season made me start to think, maybe they shoot this in, like, three or 4 weeks.
Yeah, like, super quick.
So it's, like, pretty much like a short movie shoot.
Right.
In which case...
And it's like, you know, they're shooting in Monterey or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's an unenjoyable shoot for them either.
Yeah.
So maybe it isn't that difficult for them to get it
done. They actually shoot in L.A., I believe.
Oh, okay.
So even easier. That's home base for all these people.
Yeah, you roll out of bed and drive to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'd be a little bit surprised if we got a season three just kind of based on the way things have gone this season. And I don't know if I don't know, man. I don't know if they intended on having it go further than this season. But it certainly doesn't feel like the storyline you would expect to be the end all be all of Big Little Lies, does it?
It's just weird that they have to wrap. They kind of created this new big storyline for season two.
Yeah.
With Celeste versus Mary Louise.
Yes.
So not only do they have to answer all those questions and wrap that up, but then, oh yeah, we still have the whole Monterey 5 thing going on as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. One other thing, Corey, Jane's boyfriend, when she confronts him and he tells her that he was being interviewed, brought in for questioning, he also tells her that Detective Quinlan was asking about Perry, that this is the African-American woman who's been, like, stalking the Monterey 5 since last season, doing her job. She's a cop.
Mm-hmm.
That she also knows Perry raped Jane, and that Ziggy's Perry's child. And that Quinlan, the cop, is super confident that with five witnesses, one of them is going to crack. She likes her math. She likes her odds. And Corey says, the first one who does gets a break. The other four are fucked.
I keep getting defensive about things that happen in shows, and I'm like, there's no way that would happen, even though I have no clue because I'm not an expert on the topics. The other show that I'm thinking of is obviously Handmaid's Tale, where I'm like, no, Canada would never do that. They would never do that. Maybe they would in an alternate reality. So I'm having a hard time with this whole thing. The cops are basically admitting and acknowledging all the bad stuff that they knew Perry was doing and was doing at the time that he slipped down the stairs.
Uh-huh.
And you're telling me that these women are going to be, quote unquote, fucked because they act in a moment of self-defense to, like, knock this dude off? No, they'll be screwed because they lied about it, but that's got to be, like, obstruction of justice, max.
Here's the way I had to talk
accomplice
myself.
Accomplice to manslaughter? Like, none of these women are going to prison.
I had to talk myself sort of into this, because all of us watching, this is the problem we're having.
This is probation, baby.
Wrapping our heads around the consequences.
These are rich white ladies. They're going to get good lawyers.
That's where the sauce is, though, Barrett. They're rich white ladies and Zoe Kravitz who have thumbed their noses up sort of at the law, the community.
Yeah.
People all feel... It's like, when it happened, everybody was like, okay, just tell us what actually happened.
Yeah.
And these five chicks were like, nope, nothing happened. Nobody pushed him. He fell.
Yeah.
And after months of that, the police and the DA and the fucking... Everyone is probably annoyed, I would guess. And then, I don't think... Outside of the squad, that the community loves all these women.
Right, that's true.
you know?
Yeah.
So you think there's like a vibe in there.
Okay. All right.
That's what I've talked myself into.
They want to make an example out of these women.
That's the impression I'm talking myself into.
Yeah.
For the sake of needing this to make more sense, because that's the problem we keep coming upon, is like they're building all this drama and suspense around the worst case scenario of, in our heads, them getting like some probation.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what we're scared of here. So that then, at that point, I care way, way more about Celeste versus Mary Louise than I do about like the cop or them looking into the girls, or using that as an excuse to get into the murder. Like, I don't care about the murder, dude. I don't care.
Yeah. And I guess, right. And Quinlan is like, she's tackling this as if these five women like plotted to act in cold blood to like murder some nice guy.
Which is just not even close
to
the case.
Right. So it's
nothing points that direction.
It's just interesting that they are treating it as if it's such a, you know,
threat.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a weird...
All right, what else happened on this episode?
So after Corey tells Jane all that shit, this leads to an emergency beach meeting with the whole Monterey Five, and Madeline's like insistent that they won't break, but then Bonnie and Madeline get into a fight, and Madeline goes so far as to remind Bonnie that she's the one who pushed Perry. They get into it. Jane's like, nobody fucking pushed anyone. He slipped. The whole squad is fracturing is the only point from that scene. Bonnie goes to the hospital to visit her mother, and she's like writing out an admission in a notebook as she has these glimpses of water again. I am so sick of the water visions. I need someone to drown. First 10 minutes of next week. Get rid of the water, please. She also daydreams about smothering her mother with a pillow.
Oh, yeah.
And then later straight
Which we talked about last week.
Yeah, as a possibility. And then she really went there. And then she tells the doctor straight up, like, or asks the doctor, like, straight up, like, can we kill her?
Uh-huh.
And the doctor's like, well, you know, no, we can't. And she's like, well, you'd do it for a dog. It's like, dude, are you trying to make yourself a suspect at this point? Or are you just, she's a mess. Madeline goes home and recalls the entire fight she had with Bonnie to Ed. But the only reason this matters, she can't tell him the truth of why that fight happened, the root issue. And he clearly senses that and is disappointed by it. It's just that lack of honesty and truth still with Madeline. And there's like that curtain between their lives that she's put there that he doesn't want.
It's always, this is a dangerous road to go down when you want to tell somebody about something, but the reason for the something you can't acknowledge.
Yeah.
And so you try to tell the story anyways.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Just tell them.
Look, you really want to tell the story? We know you do. Don't tell the story.
Yeah.
Don't talk about the
where you said fuck off to your friend.
Right. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
They don't need to hear that story. Mm. You're good. You're good. Renata insists to Madeline after this whole situation with Ed, she goes to Renata and says, I want to confess to Ed, basically. I want to tell him everything that happened. She wants to come clean. And Renata's like, no, it's a fucking pact. That's not how pacts work at all. Madeline should be starting to rub on you a little bit if you're a huge Madeline person, because she's very, very selfish. Even in her trying to be unselfish, she's doing selfish things.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm ready for somebody to crack.
Yeah, we only got one more. Somebody needs to do something, crack-wise.
Like, I am starting to feel the weight. Like, that's one thing the show is doing really nicely, is, like, making the viewer feel the weight of the secret. Like, because you're kind of, I'm kind of itching in my seat, like, oh my God, Bonnie, just stand up and yell it in the courtroom.
Yes.
Just fucking do it.
No, they've done a fantastic job referring to it as such, too. The lie, the secret. And that is the point of the season, is that you cannot have a lie that big exist and not brew poison all throughout your life.
Exactly, yeah.
And wreck shit. Yes. It just cannot be done.
Yes.
Millions of people have tried and are trying actively. Doesn't work. But these girls have not learned that lesson yet, apparently. Renata has her own fucking problems, considering her husband Gordon's pending charges. And in fact, as a result, they have to let their domestic assistant, Juliet, go.
You hate to see it.
It's so sad, Barrett. Renata tells Juliet, this is not goodbye. They're going to rise up again and hire her back. Probably not, based on what happens later on in the episode, but it's a very sweet scene. We then find Celeste sitting on her deck outside. The boys join her because they can't sleep. It's just she's sitting there thinking about Perry and shit and has a weird vision of like
Celeste has been sitting on some deck.
skipping rocks on the beach. Good Lord. The next day before the court proceedings begin, Mary Louise walks over there and attempts to apologize to her daughter-in-law, insisting that they're still family, and Celeste is like, I assure you, we are not. Thank you, though. The judge announces that she isn't satisfied with the psychiatric reports, and while she doesn't want to remove the boys, she does have concerns. So Celeste will have to take the stand tomorrow. And her usually silent attorney, Katie, warns her that Mary Louise's lawyer, by the way, his name is Ira, fits him like a glove.
What are you trying to say?
He's an incredibly annoying lawyer. The worst. He's from stuff, too.
Yeah, he's been in a lot.
He's from all kinds of stuff. He was from True Blood. I'll name his HBO
stuff. That is right. That
is
correct.
There you go. Anyway, Katie says that the lawyers are going to try to make her look erratic on the stand, which, yes, obviously. Madeline, Bonnie, and Renata all show up. Madeline apologizes to Bonnie, and Bonnie kind of realizes Madeline is shook. She says, it's getting to you, isn't it? And we keep bringing up that notion again. Then Celeste has to testify, and Mary Louise's lawyer, Ira, gets to question her first, and he opens with questions about her abusive relationship with her husband, Perry. And she admits that it was complicated. My relationship with my husband was very complicated. It was not healthy. But she does not really own up to the unhealthy nature of their relationship in that house, which is what this guy's trying to paint up, that these kids were endangered. They were put in a bad spot. Then he really does a good job of painting that picture. He pulls out a picture of Joe, the bartender. And Celeste can't even remember his name. Remember, she slept with that dude last episode.
Yes, I do. I do remember that.
And Ira propositions, are you really over your sickness? And he shows pictures of more men on a fucking, he's got a projector screen up in the courtroom, dude. He's just blasting her one night stands up in front of all these people,
in front of all her friends, and yeah,
it's a tough
situation. That's you know, it's pretty, you know,
it's not good.
Feels unfair.
It does feel unfair. They had her followed clearly with a PI or whatever, private investigator. Mary Louise did. They've got photos of all these men that she's been having these very casual hookups with that, by the way, she barely even remembers. She doesn't even know Joe's name, for instance, his first name even. She knows one of their first names, but no last name. Ira very effectively paints her to be an unstable, unraveling, grieving woman. And there's not a real way she could have responded to that.
Yeah.
Other than the way she did, which is with the truth, which I thought was super effective. And I was like, please, God, just tell it, like, just like be honest with people and you'll be okay. And she was honest. And I thought she like opened up to the judge. Obviously, she wasn't honest about the fact that she knows someone was murdered. But that's neither here nor there. It has nothing to fucking do with this in my mind.
And all she really says in her declarative statements are that she did not push her husband, which is the truth.
It is. She also argues that her sexual activities have nothing to do with her ability to parent her children, and that could very well be true. It just seems that with what we know, it seems she's kind of spiraling in this like drug-fueled haze of sex and weird recovery, and it's scary as fuck. Ira then carefully suggests that Josh told Mary Louise, Josh is one of the boys, that after one time he tried to get in bed with Celeste and there was a stranger there, and Josh couldn't wake his mom up, presumably because she was so drugged up, and the man told him to go back to bed. And I don't even know if that happened. It doesn't really matter if it happened. He painted it up in such a way that I was like, oh, God.
That's when you say, well, sometimes young boys need to learn that they can't come sleep in mommy's bed anymore. And so you bring in a stranger to sleep in the bed with you.
Yes.
And it's an effective teaching tool.
It's called the circle of life. Celeste does admit to self-destructive behavior. She says, quote, I'm not going to look you in the eye and say that I'm healed, but I will say this. I'm in the process of healing. And through it all, I've always been a good mother. And I wish to God, like, she's been through hell and back. This woman is in an incredibly difficult situation. But I just don't know what's going to happen. I don't think she's going to win this case. Like, it looks so bad.
Well, let's just fast forward to when the judge is about to announce her ruling on the case.
Yes. The very end of the episode, the judge is about to announce the custody decision.
I kind of felt like maybe Celeste was going to win.
Did you? So you had good vibes. You were like, okay, what? Oh, no, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, oh, my God. What if you're making a huge mistake?
Okay, well, that's the thing, right? She flipped the coin there. She didn't think things were going to go her way.
I guess not.
And at the last second, she's like, I've got one other Hail Mary.
Yeah.
And the problem, obviously, is for her lawyer or former lawyer. I'm not even sure. Because she's now going to represent herself and do the questioning of Mary Louise on the stand, which, oh, my God, if nothing was going to get me to tune in to the finale.
That should be some fireworks.
That was all we needed. But, I'm going to tune in to watch that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And this is going to be a mess. This is going to be a real mess. I have a hard time. I don't know how do they wrap this up? You're exactly right. That's a great question. How does this get wrapped up into the final episode? When the season started, I imagined that this would have to end with Mary Louise being killed.
Right. That's not...
Doesn't seem like that's even on the table.
Yeah, that doesn't look like it's going to happen anymore.
No, it doesn't. So, we don't get a death this season. That'd be disappointing.
I still feel like Zoe Kravitz's mom's going to... Or Bonnie's mom's going to...
Well, she doesn't count. You think she's going to do what?
Croak.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm quite confident she'll die.
And maybe she doesn't. But next...
I just don't care about her.
In the next episode, you would think that we're going to spend a large amount of time in that courtroom again.
You would think.
So another thing we got to wrap up is Madeline and Ed, who's having a little coffee talk.
Yeah, he meets up with the lady
with that mommy
that we saw him approached by in the bar last episode. Yeah. It turns out she's aware that her husband cheated on her with his wife, with Ed's wife, Madeline, and she wants to have sex with Ed. And it's not just about revenge. It's about sort of a correcting of things almost to her, sort of, it seems. Mm-hmm. Like, she says that her therapist told her it's not about payback, but not being the, quote, wimpy ass victim, which is her way of looking at it, I suppose.
That sounds like a really convenient way to justify payback.
It does, doesn't it, Barrett? It does indeed. She tells Ed that she keeps a masturbation diary and a sex bucket list, and that Ed made both.
Way to go, Ed.
Ed.
Just way to go.
You know, I've never had a woman approach me and tell me that I've made both her masturbation diary and sex bucket list.
Yeah, I'd take one of those.
Just a partial. I'd be a footnote in the masturbation diary if it meant that it would, you know, I'd get there. She says, I want you. Don't overthink it. We have sex. We'll probably love it. If we don't, we move on. Of course, if we do love it, we do it again and again. Wow. So Ed has the opportunity now to carry on an affair, an extramarital affair with no strings attached, allegedly, with this woman as many times as he wants. And he has to make that decision. He goes back home, and Madeline tells him that she hopes to earn his trust back and that she wants that more than anything. And he finds her having like a breakdown alone in her room, dancing in her wedding dress, like half zipped up. And then she goes into this long spiel. Well, first he's like, I can't just wave a wand. Neither can you. And later when he finds her in the bedroom having the meltdown, she goes into this long spiel to Ed about how she found the dress, reminding her of a time when she thought she would be a good wife, like that she'd end up a good wife. Obviously, she believes now that she did not. This whole spiel she goes on is effective because his reaction is, like I said, you can't just wave a wand, but that was pretty fucking close. And I thought it was good to get some truth and honesty and like real raw emotion out of Madeline, like for once too. There was no ulterior motive. She was just honest with him about this like disappointment she had in herself. And it bred some good.
Yeah. It felt a little affected to me, to be completely honest.
What do you mean by that?
Like, I think she wanted him to walk in on her trying on the wedding dress.
So you thought it was like a little too much of a sort of a setup.
Yeah, like, I did.
Discover me in my wedding dress.
Right, and I couldn't tell if that was purposeful or if I thought it was like a bit forced from Reese Witherspoon. But it didn't. That scene did not land for me.
Didn't ring true?
Yeah, for one of those reasons, whichever it was. It just kind of felt like, okay, so like this is what finally broke you down a little bit, Ed?
Right.
It's like walking home when she knew you were coming home with food for her and she's like listening to a song that you liked, like dancing around in her old wedding dress.
It just didn't take much, sort of?
Yeah, like it just like, Like, maybe it was simply her effort putting into that and then saying something honest that I get that kind of vibed with him that made an impact. It just...
You didn't find it to be close to waving a wand.
I didn't, right. And it didn't feel completely honest. It felt like she went and did... When you're thinking about Madeline walking around the house, it feels more... It doesn't feel like she was like... She was cleaning out her closet and she found the wedding dress. It felt like she was like, I'm gonna go put my old wedding dress on.
Like, how is there a way for me to put a show on here?
Yeah,
and kind of accomplish
it was
something?
Yeah, it just felt a little bit like a show.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. I absolutely 100. But now that we've walked through it, I hate it. I hate the whole scene. Next, we're at Renata and Gordon's bankruptcy proceedings where their domestic assistant, Juliet, is looking to collect her severance, and she tells the dude in charge of the case that includes $60,000 for, quote, stress management. Gordon, you dog. The second she said it, I was like, yes, because it's a thing that happens. This is a thing.
Yeah.
This is very much a thing that happens, especially with wealthy people, and this is hilarious that they put this in here, so I was dying. Later in the car, Gordon tries to like tell Renata he still loves her, and her response is, shut the fuck up for the rest of your fucked up fucking life. I don't want to hear one fucking word from your fucked up little twerp mouth on why you fucked up, no matter what fucked up excuse you come up with, you fucking shit. And then she shoves a bunch of tissue paper in his mouth.
I don't know whether or not we'll recall this entire season of Big Little Lies with like a lot of fondness, or if we'll kind of
indifference,
you know,
nitpick
it, and yeah, probably some indifference. But I will always remember Laura Dern's performance this season, and like it was worth watching this episode just to see the look on her face, realizing that Gordon was porking the au pair.
Yes,
and then have that meltdown in the car. I mean, that was gold. That was gold.
I've not seen a whole lot of more believable performances than Laura Dern in this season. She's been so good.
Also, look, I know a lot of guys are like, you know, good at heart and are well-intentioned and want to be faithful and honest. It is beyond me why anybody on either side, the wife or the husband, agrees to hire a hot nanny. It's just a recipe for disaster.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Like, there is a reason why big, major white shoe law firms no longer hire, like, hot 26-year-old secretaries.
Because it resulted in utter disaster.
Because it is bad for business. It is bad for
everyone
the relationships of the lawyers and the partners that work at the office.
Because they're married.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, if you're on a diet, don't stock your kitchen with fucking donuts and McDonald's.
That is what they say. My kitchen's fully stocked with Mickey D's, mostly hash browns. But yeah, no, I mean, the car meltdown was probably my favorite scene in this season so far. I loved it. Jane stops by Mary Louise's place at the end of the episode and goes batshit on her again. And of course, Mary Louise quickly turns it back onto Jane by asking, are you struggling, Jane? With your conscience, perhaps? And it turns out Ziggy told Mary Louise that Jane purchased a gun. Ziggy's a rat, and Mary Louise believes that Jane intended to use that gun on Perry. So now she's sort of like gathering evidence on Jane, sort of like. Remember Jane was like, what, are you going to take my kid away too? Like three episodes ago? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
And now she's certainly...
Seems like she's
planting that seed.
Uh-huh. Same kind of conversation she was having with Celeste. Then Bonnie tells her mom, who is still unconscious, that she needs to confess to her. She goes on this long, winding confession about how she resents her for the childhood abuse, which led to her having sex at 13 years old just to feel loved, and eventually settle for a man who she doesn't, and she can't even finish her sentence. But damn, that was kind of harsh to hear that her whole marriage is just bullshit. I kind of feel bad for the dude. I find myself feeling kind of bad for him. But mainly, I resent you for killing a man, says Bonnie. And at first I was like, wait a minute. The mom killed someone? And I was like, oh, because she killed a man. Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. She says, when I lunged at him, I was pushing you. And that push was a long time coming.
Ooh, baby.
Cool little line there. Anyway, at the end, to close it all out, before the judge can announce her custody decision, as Barrett mentioned, Celeste stands up and asks if she wants... she says she wants Mary Louise to be called as a witness and that she wants to question her herself. She says, I was fair game, so was she. and I'm sure her lawyer is thrilled. And that is the end of Big Little Lies, episode 6.
Yeah. Got a lot to pack in.
The bad mother.
To tomorrow, to Sunday, if they intend on wrapping this up.
Yeah. Hashtag penultimate. I don't know how they're going to do that.
I don't either.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but I'm looking forward to seeing them attempt it.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. I don't have high hopes. That is all. This episode of OCC is also brought to you by our brand spanking new sponsor. It's Raycon. Raycon wireless earbuds. It's 2019. Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. These are a game changer. If you've been like my dad, clinging desperately to the past with wires dangling from his ears, bouncing all over the place as he jogs around the trail every day, that's sad. It's time to join us in the future, which is the present. Speaking of which, Raycon wireless earbuds make a great present, even for your dad. And they start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing. The company was actually co-founded by Ray J. Remember Ray J? He hit it first.
I do.
Yeah, and celebrities.
That Ray J, huh?
Yeah, that Ray J. And celebrities like Cardi B and J.R. Smith and Snoop Dogg are already obsessed. Raycon's E50 wireless earbuds have totally changed the game. They're incredibly comfortable, so easy to take anywhere. And unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires, no stems poking out. And of course, they don't just look great, they sound great too. Raycon offers their wireless earbuds for everyone in a range of fun colors and at an unbeatable price. Raycon offers their wireless earbuds at buyraycon.com/dragon, buyraycon.com/dragon. And guess what? You'll get 15% off your entire order. That's buyraycon.com/dragon for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. If you've been eyeing a pair, now is the time to get an amazing deal. Support our new sponsor. Grab yourself some brand spanking new incredible earbuds. buyraycon.com/dragon, and you will get 15% off. Barrett.
Yes.
Jump into Euphoria.
Ooh, make me feel so good.
Yes, quickly. Let's. First of all, I've watched this during the light of day again, and it was world shattering. Even in an episode where not nearly as much happened, it's just not a show to be watched in the light of day. It is like taking a large Xanax to the face.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Just before we jump in.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody's going to die this season on the show? Is anybody going to murder somebody?
Somebody needs to murder somebody with the amount of tension we've built up.
Yeah, because in pretty much every scene, I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Is somebody going to kill that person? Are they going to kill him? Are they going to kill her?
Everyone's going to die.
Oh my God. Oh God, don't, I don't want to see it. I don't.
Every scene
like
with
that
Nate,
is how I feel. And then I'm like, this is a show about high school. Like, it's about high schoolers.
Yeah, but every once in a while,
dumbass decisions.
There's a psycho high schooler who like stabs a classmate.
And Cal, you know?
Uh-huh.
I really feel like he's going to murder one of these hookups.
I keep getting, dude, any scene with Cal or Nate, I'm like, well, he's gonna kill this person, right?
Yeah, so that's, you know, it, I'm just saying, like, they I guess it's a credit to the show to like instilling that kind of tension in you.
Yeah,
but also sometimes it like takes away from like some of the emotional aspects that they try to draw home as well.
I completely agree with that. I have found myself distracted by the threat of violence.
Right, because it's like, is this supposed to be a scary show or is it supposed to be more of an emotional one? And then it's like, I mean,
it's,
you know, I'm not saying that it can't be both, but yeah, yes, I'm
there,
distracted
there
by the threat of violence at instances in this show.
I think that's also sort of intentional.
Probably.
It's meant to draw this this picture of these type of people who are so conflicted and torn up that they are typically very sad and emotional and lonely,
yeah,
but also incredibly violent and rage-filled and as a result of their circumstances. By the way, the episode is called 03 Bonnie and Clyde, which I liked. I believe that's the Jay-Z remade version of the Biggie song, right?
Yes, and every episode is named after a song.
Is it?
Except for Pilot, of course.
How about that?
But like the previous episode was, I'm pretty sure it was called Shook Ones Part 2.
You're right.
The Mobb Deep song.
You're right. You're correct, sir. Thank you. Why is it that pilots aren't named? Typically, they just put Pilot. It's like, name the damn thing. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's also weird that they can't rename it in hindsight.
Yeah, when it's been signed off on and the show has now been bought and is put on HBO, and it's like, hey, go rename Pilot something else, bro.
Yeah,
the fuck.
I've often wondered that.
I have as well. This episode If you haven't noticed, each episode of the show sort of focuses on one character, at least partially. And this episode is Maddie's. And we open with Rue's whole spiel about Maddie's. This is like my favorite part of each one of these, by the way. The opening couple minutes where Rue does her
really
monologue.
Good. Yeah, really great. Yeah.
She knocks right. every one of them out of the park. We find out Maddie was like a pageant girl. A pageant coach somewhere, unrelated to her even, got busted for child molestation, so her mom canceled her career, and then she refused to eat for a week out of protest, and it sort of spirals from there. We get into Maddie and Nate's relationship, and that's sort of the main focus of this episode, right? The ins and outs of how it got started, like how her lying to him about being a virgin because she actually had sex with a 40-year-old when she was 13 on a beach or something insanely creepy.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we find out Maddie idolizes Sharon Stone in Casino.
This is a great, just like, tidbit.
It is.
It's a really nice choice. It's one of these little like creative touches on television shows that's just really like well done.
They've done such a good job on Euphoria for like bringing in these outside elements. Mm-hmm. And Casino was a cool one. Sharon Stone being her spirit animal is perfect. It's also the most terrifying thing you could possibly imagine as a man.
Yes.
Because Sharon Stone in Casino is the most frustrating female character I think I've ever seen play out on screen. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
For the male. Now, we also find out that she watches porn to practice. She analyzes it and practices the moaning and the groaning in different positions. Which is unusual.
And doing all like the back arches.
Oh, yeah.
Head and the hair tosses.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's really in there. She's doing it. Making sure her game is on point, which you got to respect. But yeah, so the biggest message I got from this episode is sort of described by Rue early on. She's describing Nate coming to terms with his sexuality as the root of a lot of violence. But she says it in a way, like she's talking in generalities, like not just with Nate, saying that issue, coming to terms with your sexuality in the dark, results in a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we see that pretty constantly. Most of the famous serial killers throughout American history, for example, had sexually repressed stuff that got them to where they were at. Like, mm-hmm. that's usually one of the root causes of, like, one of the sickest people that walk the earth is people that have been forced to live in darkness with their sexuality, or that are sick, obviously. And when the two combine, boom, you got a problem. And that was sort of like, I mean, the sickness of violence and abuse and the way that, I guess, Nate sort of, like, looks, or I thought he looked at Maddie. I can't even tell what his deal is by the end of the episode. Like, does he actually really care about her when she meets up with him at the motel or whatever? Like, again, I was like, oh, he's going to kill her.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he does have genuine affection for her. But as one of the things Rue says in the voiceover, he loves her, but he wants to, but in an extremely possessive way. He loves her in a way that she's a thing that he owns.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is a root cause of their issues and his issues and why he thinks and why he thinks it's okay to
act
physically
the way he does.
Attack her.
Yes, which is a perfect painting of the dynamic that happens in so many like broken households where domestic violence and shit becomes a problem. It's because of the dynamic in the relationship being poisoned from the get-go. Where if Nate looks at her as a possession, of course things are going to go awry. By the way, when he rolls up there at the end and to the motel, right as his dad is leaving in his truck, like Cal's truck is leaving and Nate's truck is pulling in right by where Mina is smoking.
Yeah.
That was some depressing shit, dude. That was
that was dark.
That was real dark.
But effective.
Super effective. The message is brutal. It's like, it's one of the ones that in my 30s I have come to face the most is like, You identify the similarities between you and your parents,
mm-hmm.
and then the ways you've broken away from them, and there's a lot of baggage there for every human that becomes an adult to like look at.
Yeah, and it's the scariest part, I would imagine, one of the scariest parts about being a parent is you are terrified that you're going to pass down like all the bad things about yourself to your children.
And you
do. And in a lot of ways you do, but it's also I think it just speaks to, at least in my personal opinion, the fact that, like, parenting is super, super important.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, whatever's in your nature will be, obviously, but, like, mm-hmm. the nurture is
incredibly
important.
Yeah. What I've always found is, like, that's such a scary thought for when you have kids, to be able to know what they're going to go through, almost like because you went through it,
yeah.
and you know they're going to have some of the same tendencies as you. I have found that that's sort of the thing, though. If you have a healthy relationship with your parents and you had good parents, they can help you sort of understand the shit you go through, because they went through similar things, or things that they can parallel, or whatever. And that's sort of the way you can handle that. Just so that there's, like, I'm not trying to paint this as, like, there's no light at the end of the tunnel and it's horrible because we all get all the bad things from our parents. Like, it's not, you don't have to look at it in a negative way. That's just life.
Yeah.
And then we all tackle it in different ways. What else? God. Oh, Rue goes to NA and tells everyone she's lying the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, we also have Rue telling us that there's nothing on earth as good as fentanyl.
Right, which is a shame.
Now,
I was hoping there would be.
I didn't get the feeling that she had ever taken fentanyl before.
That was her first.
It was her
experience. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a terrifying drug dealer, forced her to take fentanyl, and now she can certifiably say, conviction that it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, but it's like, with the scale of drugs and how potent and powerful they are, fentanyl doesn't even sit on the chart. It's like 150 times more powerful than heroin in some cases.
Okay, so fentanyl is basically...
It's a super drug. Yeah, it's fucking chaos.
It's the Thanos of opiates.
It really is, though. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
So and stronger than morphine and heroin and
by
Oxycontin.
It's not close.
Okay.
It's like hundreds of times or some shit.
Wow.
And it's that's why he gives her literally a knife point of it. And she's out, because that's why all these kids overdose on it, dude. Because you can't cut coke or heroin with something that powerful.
And what is fentanyl actually used for?
It's a painkiller. It's used for, like, extreme instances of pain or something. I don't even know that it's used in fucking medicine anymore. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was scary.
Good stuff. They both get rules tattooed on their lower lip.
Yeah.
It's a combination of Jules and Rue.
At first I was like, wait, that dude is misspelling Jules. And then I realized what it was.
They're doing the thing.
Yeah. Which, hey, I mean, at least it's on the inner lip, not on your body. That's kind of smart.
The inner lip sort of fades, doesn't it?
It does.
A lot of chicks did this at Texas State in college.
But this is kind of the first point of the episode where obviously we get a lot of Nate and Maddie drama with the entire thing where he's going to be charged with...
choking her.
With assault,
yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
For me, the bigger theme boiled down to the relationship between Rue and Jules here in this episode. And this is kind of the first, like, instance where... they're not really taking things that slow, and there is a lot riding on this relationship, especially when it comes to, like, the responsibility that Jules is suddenly going to feel.
Yeah, it clearly starts to wear on her.
Yeah,
even in the tattoo scene.
Yes,
and then from there, it just gets worse and worse with each scene that we see of either of those characters. And Barrett had made this point off mic, I guess. It really does feel like that responsibility that you just described is going to rip her away from Jules.
Yeah,
from Rue.
I started thinking about it, and they don't totally spell it out for you, but they make it pretty clear, like, what's about to happen.
Right.
And if you just put yourself in the shoes of Jules here, like, this is a nobody should have to be in this position, because suddenly you have come to this understanding, and we see this towards the end of the episode when Rue's childhood friend, like, tells her, like, she's doing good and it's because of you.
Yeah.
And, like, oh my God, this person's well-being and physical and mental state of mind is riding on how this relationship plays out.
It's completely dependent on Jules.
Yeah.
And it's an unfair weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, if something goes wrong, if I'm not feeling this anymore, if I make a mistake,
then she's got that.
This person is most likely going to turn back to drugs
and probably die
and hurt herself or put others in danger as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, my goodness, that is a huge burden
it is,
to carry around.
It is the the battle that people who get into relationships with, fall in love with, have family of addicts, because that's the thing you face, is like your dynamic is not like it is with the normal human. You have to have a completely different dynamic with somebody who's an addict. And this is so common, I think, of addicts to latch onto somebody that they feel super, super comfortable with and that they identify with, and then just sort of say like, all right, take care of me, please.
Yeah, I would imagine that in anonymous style meetings, 12 steps, assorted recovery programs, that they encourage you to not jump into relationships while you're on your path to recovery.
I would imagine.
I don't know. I mean, like,
I've never had a sponsor like you're supposed to have. and I imagine that's the person who would tell you that.
Yes.
But yeah, it's like,
and I mean, Ali, her mentor sponsor. Slash sponsor is, yes. Is starting to tell her some of these things. Like,
yeah.
What happens when this doesn't work out? Cause it won't. Cause you're in high school.
Even last episode, he started to bring it up.
Yes.
And, oh man, he had such a good quote about high school. He said, nothing in high school lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so accurate, and it's important, because when you're in high school, it all feels like it will last forever.
Absolutely.
And that it's everything that's happening is the most important thing that'll ever happen in your life.
And that's a really good segue, because a lot of times I'm watching this show and I'm thinking to myself, I have this tendency now at 32 years old where I'm like, I'm getting that kind of like out of touch adult mindset where I'm like,
yeah,
these aren't high school problems. This is so adult for these kids. Like, they're not really doing stuff like this. Like, this is not how they feel about it.
And, right.
But then you stop and you think about how important everything going on in your life during high school felt.
And how dramatic it was.
And this is how these kids feel. It is that important and that serious to them in the moment.
It's all you know. You don't have perspective yet to know how silly and stupid and trivial all these issues that you see as enormous are.
And there's just youth. What do they say? Youth is wasted on the young. And
yes.
It's like, this cycle will continue,
forever.
In perpetuity.
Like,
forever. Yes. Like, we as adults and parents will try to tell kids to just enjoy their lives and like nothing's that serious. And they will continue to not listen because they don't know any better, and they,
it's just the way it goes, though.
The way it goes.
Every human has to learn on their fucking own.
Yeah.
Oh, we also went through Rue's brief and horrifying sexual history, which was not what I expected at all.
I like these little cutaway scenes, though.
They're fun.
They bring some levity to the episodes.
Thank God, pretty heavy. Whew, yeah, her first kiss at 12, her 4 hand jobs in the 8th grade, her 2 blow jobs in the 9th, one of which was emotionally coerced out of her. Her trying to teach her friend Lexi to French kiss, which I think was probably the first time she realized she might be attracted to girls too, or whatever. And then she lost her virginity at 15 after drinking 1 beer with 2 Xanax bars, which is like super dangerous, as she puts it.
Yes.
And all I know is life is not a Nicholas Sparks novel. Is the quote of the episode from Rue. Very good one.
Let's see. One thing I wanted to touch on was with the Maddie and Nate drama.
Uh-huh.
I think it's important to remember that, like, the reason that her parents can press charges and the reason why the cop can, like, basically cordon her off in a room and then cut off her sweater is because she's a child.
She's a minor.
So they
17.
Can, so they can't, because, in the adult world, how many domestic violence and assault cases get dropped because a significant other or spouse is like, nine, I'm not talking.
Exactly. But in some states, the DA can press charges anyway.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. But that is why they are able to do that to her.
Yeah,
because she's being treated here as a child. She's a minor.
Yes. And the way that entire thing unfolds at the school is pretty outrageous. Basically, she shows up to school wearing like a hoodie and pounds of makeup around her neck to try to conceal the fact that she was choked and has bad bruising from the scene at the carnival the week prior. And that doesn't work. She passes out because she hasn't been eating or drinking and is also sweating profusely. And the whole thing unravels from there. Cal gets called up to the school, of course. He has no idea what the hell's going on. He's freaking out. But what ends up happening is Cal sitting in a room with Nate, asking him if he did it. Nate lies to his dad. But then he basically says, all right, I'm going to coach you through how we handle this.
Yeah. What was your takeaway here from this sit down? When Cal sits down and starts asking Nate about it, does he... how did you feel about
this? I thought it was more of what we just discussed, that it was sort of Cal recognizing, well, this is the spiral of my son now becoming the monster that I am, sort of like the same kind of monster or whatever. And I guess he wants to protect him from as much of it as he can.
Yeah, I mean, Cal knows that Nate did it, right?
I believe he does.
And so kind of like pumping him with that question is basically starting to
coach him
to say, no,
yes.
Didn't do it.
Right? He's, I think, point blank telling him, you're going to deny that you did this.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of,
Because it doesn't, the rest of it, like, doesn't fit unless that is what he meant by it, right?
Yeah.
God, the whole thing is a mess. It's, by the way, Nate has been suspended from school indefinitely as they investigate the entire thing. I believe he's been kicked off the football team.
No tolerance policy.
Where they say they have a zero tolerance policy. And it's going to be really interesting to see where things go from there. Cal actually gets like super sad after the fact and meets up with another one of his hookups in the motel room. This guy's name is Minako. The boys call him Mina. And we get to watch Mina do a little dance for Cal. He's not into it. Taylor got home from work. No bullshit. Taylor got home from work about, an hour ago or whatever, and an hour and a half. Walked into the living room, and I'm sitting there watching Mina dance. And she's like, Euphoria? And I'm like, yep. And that's what's going on in my house right now. Yeah, dude, this was...
I wonder how many episodes of this season we have. This was 5.
I don't want to know. This was like a placeholder episode almost, though. Didn't it just sort of set more stuff up? I guess it was a scene setter. It was like, okay.
I think we can jump straight to the end here.
Yeah, let's do that.
What is Nate going to try to pull here?
I don't know. Again, I immediately thought, well, he's going to kill her. He has her download this app, Signal, so that they can communicate secretly. No trace.
Yes.
No record. And has her meet him at the motel.
Yeah.
And I literally expected, again, him to, like, open the door and start choking her.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be something dark, but...
And it seemed to be...
Violent, I should say. Now, I believe that they are going to work together to help get Nate off this charge.
Right.
And I feel like they're going to frame somebody. I just don't know who it is or who they're going to blackmail to make this all work.
They have to put it on somebody, though.
Yeah.
I feel like McKay is a possibility based on him being... Christopher McKay is the center of next week's episode.
Okay.
I feel like he's pretty ripe for having something pinned on him. He's away at school. He came back for the carnival. He's playing football, but he's not getting any playing time, and he knows he's not going to go pro, and like it's just a situation where I could see him have a downfall. But it was a good episode, but like I said, it was more of it wasn't as much intensity and... Well, a lot of intensity. Less intensity than the week prior, and we didn't have any huge, huge, huge breaks in the story so much as Maddie and Nate's dynamic, a little bit more history between the two of them, and then perhaps they really do have some kind of connection that he's... I can't even tell if it's exploiting at this point. If he's exploiting it or he really does care, I don't know. And I guess we'll see what happens
from here. It's unhealthy. I'll say that much.
It doesn't seem to be healthy. Yeah, it doesn't.
One could surmise as much.
Barrett.
Yes.
What else do we have on the docket?
Man, I really just wanted to dog on Disney for deciding that they needed to remake every single one of their animated classics.
Yep.
Into a live action film.
Have you watched any of these?
No, I've not.
Okay, have you seen Beauty and the Beast?
I've not even seen Beauty and the Beast.
You didn't even see Beauty and the Beast?
No.
Man.
This is not my bag. Like, I will watch these if they happen across my Netflix or HBO accounts or whatever.
Okay.
But, like, I'm just kind of, I don't know. For some reason, they don't interest me that much.
I'll say this.
It's weird because I'm a big fan of musicals, so you'd think that they would be kind of up my alley.
Right.
But I don't know. It's like, I already know these stories, and putting them, casting them with, like, real actors isn't all that exciting to me, I guess.
Yeah. First and foremost, Swedish-made penis enlarger pumps are my bag, baby. And second, I saw the Beauty and the Beast one. And Beauty and the Beast was one of, like, the 3 or 4 Disney movies I probably watched 100 times as a little kid. I loved it. And I loved Gaston. He's the best character, best villain in any Disney movie ever. And it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was super well done. And even so, I was still like, I just didn't really need that.
Yeah.
You know, I already have the stories in my head, and they're in such a way that they're super meaningful to me and nostalgic. And I don't need them fudged up by these real life humans.
Okay. It's like when you read a great book, you may have the desire to see it turned into a television or film so that it can be visualized on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But in these cases, we've already seen the great movie.
It's just like a different
and
version.
And they were already a visualization. So it's like the remake is just...
What are we achieving?
Yeah. I don't know what we're achieving here. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's, and they're not like... They're not updated in like a modern way. It's not a twist on the story. It
Here's
is
what I'm thinking.
Just a frame-for-frame remake with real people instead of
animated characters. It must be that they're betting on it mattering to kids because it clearly doesn't matter to us.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's Disney. They're making $1 jillion off of these things.
Well, that they'll win out long-term even, I think, with the new versions for these new kids or whatever. Like, what's puzzling to me is if you show me Aladdin, the new one they just fucking pumped out with Will Smith, or Aladdin, the actual one that I watched as a child, I'm going to pick the cartoon.
Absolutely. Right.
Because it's better.
So the next one in line here that's about to come out is The Lion King, which I would say is the most interesting to me out of all of them.
I guess.
But I'm not like... I'm not jumping up and down about to go see that in theaters.
I'm having a hard time visualizing what the fuck how this even works.
Yes, same. And the most interesting part of the Lion King one is that they got this, you know, star-studded cast.
A ridiculous cast.
But it's also the one where we don't see any of those actors.
Their voices, right?
Yes.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to play.
This is an especially weird one. It's like, what if we made The Lion King just more realistic looking?
Yeah, what is the play? I'm very, very interested to see what this will look like on screen as more than just a trailer. That's the only thing I've seen so far.
Yeah.
And when you see those pictures of the cast up on stage at the premiere or whatever, and it's like Beyonce, Childish Gambino, I'm sorry, Donald Glover.
Yeah. John Oliver.
There's 15 of them. I'm not going to name them all.
There's a lot, yeah.
It's an incredibly star-studded movie. And yet you can't see any of those faces when the movie plays.
Yeah, and then coming next year, I saw a preview of this watching, I don't know, a sporting event or something like that on TV. I was watching something big on TV, and they debuted the first trailer for Mulan.
Yeah, I saw that too. No Mushu in the trailer.
So
people were very upset.
So we're doing it to all of them, I guess.
The Mulan trailer is dope. And I hate myself for thinking that.
So would you rank Mulan as the most interesting right now to you?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Out of the trailers I've seen, I do nothing about The Lion King is doing it for me.
Okay, yeah.
I feel obligated to care.
I don't. I don't care.
Ugh.
I just wanted to drag Disney for a second and ask what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I get it. It's all for the almighty dollar or whatever, but
of course.
It is a little sad to see them just kind of... So y'all got to put out some original shit, too. There has to be a balance. Can we do like a 70-30 balance between original and remakes or something so that it's not
Disney,
so heavy?
With all of their intellectual property and the Marvel and the everything, they just own everything at this point.
That's true.
They should be required to put out like 3 original movies a year.
Something.
Go ahead, do all your comic book movies, make Avengers 19, all that. Do the Star Wars episode 42, the saga of the Hootenannies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, yeah.
The Hootenannies.
give me 3 original pictures a year.
Yeah.
Let somebody put their fresh idea on screen.
There's like, plenty
you can,
of people
you can
out
afford
there
it if it flops.
They can. That's the beauty of it. They're making all... Dude, that should be it. If they're going to pump out an Aladdin and rake in $7 billion, they should have to like re-risk X percentage of that on something original.
Yes.
Something.
Yes.
God almighty. Anyway, that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks again to our sponsors for supporting the show. Make sure you support them to support us. We got a new one this week in Raycon. And if for some reason you're sick in the head and you don't want or need any of the greatest products known to man and you need another way to support this show, you can support us directly and get more OCC ad-free at patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, there are 3 tiers for you to pick from. You make a pledge for the month of July. You'll immediately gain access to all the prior content. And we've got good stuff coming this month. Stranger Things chapters 4 through 6 dropping this week.
This week, Ross, that is correct.
And Mayor Klein is back with us in the booth. So yeah, go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, pick your tier.
Not only am I going to put on the best 4th of July party and carnival and festival that this town of Hawkins has ever seen, but I'm going to provide you with the best...
I can't do it anymore.
Where we
best content on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles.
And cockles.
Thank God. You ran out of steam. And
I did. I ran out of, yeah.
Your accent engine. patreon.com/oystersclamscockles last time. Follow us on social media, obviously, for updates and the best in TV and movie content you can find on the whole of the internet. Instagram, we are at oystersclamscockles. Twitter, we are at clamsandcockles. And facebook.com/oystersclamscockles is where you can find us on Facebook. I am Ross Bolin. You can follow me on all social media at Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WRBolin, at WRBOLEN. And you can also listen to my other podcast, the Ross Bolin Podcast, where we focus on comedy and humor and mental health and life and substance abuse and all kinds of interesting happenings in the world. And animals, a lot of animal talk, a lot of other good stuff. It's available all the same places OCC is available. Give the Ross Bolin Podcast a listen. Barrett, where else can we hear from you and follow you?
I am on Signal at Barrett Dudley and also Instagram and Twitter at Barrett Dudley. And then give my other podcast, the Club Cool Podcast, a look-see on Instagram at Club Cool Pod. And you can find it wherever you're listening to Oyster Clams and Cockles. We meet at the intersection of style and pop culture.
Damn, Signal is real.
And if you hate my Mayor Klein by way of Heath Ledger's The Joker impression, I've never done it on that podcast.
That's true.
Wait,
that's not true.
There you go.
Isn't that a lie? Did you do it last time?
On this podcast, not on Club Cool.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I got distracted.
I mean, I can't imagine that anybody out there is like, please stop doing that voice. Like, they're probably just like, give me more.
Yeah,
which
of course.
You can go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles to get more.
Of course.
But just in case.
You can go to Club Cool.
I do not use that voice.
There you go. Signal is a real app. I didn't know that. Feel obligated to download it and check it out now. if you go to signal.org, Friedrich Nietzsche is the human they've chosen to use as an example of... a person using Signal to message someone else.
I thought that was a
dead philosopher.
Okay, that was right on.
Yep. All right, we are out. That is it. Patreon episode coming soon with Stranger Things 4 through 6. Until next week on Wednesday, adios, muchachos.